Movies based on fiction often feel surprisingly real, while movies based on real events sometimes feel at least a bit fabricated. The fault there is due to the respective filmmaker's quest for what's known as dramatic effect. Hi, I'm Dan Webster, host of Movies 101. And on this week's show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I will discuss two movies that represent both sides of this filmmaking duality, the Japanese-made Shoplifters and the U.S.-made biopic On the Basis of Sex. We'll also take a look at what to expect from the 2019 Spokane International Film Festival, which runs through next Friday. So don't touch that dial, because Movies 101 is coming up next, right here on Spokane Public Radio.
When you hear us say, listener-supported public radio, what are we really saying? Public radio is shorthand for thought-provoking, well-crafted, stimulating programs. Listener-supported means it's your money that pays for those programs. And not only the programs, but the transmitters, the computers, the electricity, everything it takes to bring you those programs. So here's a very large thank you to you, the listener, in listener-supported public radio.
Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
Mingla ba. I am Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga Law School.
And I'm Nathan Weinbinder, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that likes to flirt with both reality and fiction, depending on our respective moods. The mood this week is real and enthusiastic because we welcome back our third member, Mary Pat Truthart, who's been off attempting to right wrongs in the international community. Glad to have you back, MP.
Thanks, Dan.
And her return is timely, as one of the films we'll be talking about is law-related, it being On the Basis of Sex, the biopic of the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. We'll also tackle the Japanese film Shoplifters, which won the Palme d'Or at last May's Cannes Film Festival and is nominated for the Best Foreign Language Oscar. And finally, we'll tell you what's coming over the next week at the 2019 Spokane International Film Festival. Let's begin with something Japanese. In his 3 decades of filmmaking, Japanese writer-director Hirokazu Koreeda has attempted to tackle nothing less than the full human experience. Previous to Shoplifters, Koreeda's most recent film, which I saw last week at the Magic Lantern, I've seen two others, 1999's Afterlife and 2004's Nobody Knows. And if anything, his abilities, always strong, have grown over the years. Shoplifters delves into the story of an unusual family, one that lives by its own rules, rules such as, since merchandise in a store isn't owned by anyone, it's okay to steal it. But that isn't the only thing about this family that confounds expectations, a reality that Koreeda, who also edited Shoplifters, reveals only gradually over the film's 2-hour, 1-minute running time. We're introduced to the 5 principals when the 2 males, the father Osamu and the preteen boy Shota, find a 5-year-old girl, Juri, shivering in the cold. Next thing you know, Juri has joined the family, now 6 strong, and they continue living on as usual, even as, after a notable 2-month lull, news breaks about Juri's disappearance. As Koreeda builds to his understandable, though hardly predictable, ending, it becomes clear that he's offering a new definition of the term family, one based around the need, indeed the desperate desire, for a loving connection, no matter how unusual that connection might be.
Well, I think that Koreeda is one of the great film artists working right now, even though I think he's undersung in a way, even though this film did win the Palme d'Or, which is one of the most prestigious film awards that you can win. I still find that his legacy isn't as spoken about as much as it probably should be. And I'm a big fan of his work. Like a lot of his earlier films, especially something like Mabarossi or Still Walking, which are 2 of his earlier films that you should check out, this movie, Shoplifters, is dealing with themes of loss, themes of grief, of identity, and especially family trauma. And as you said in your intro, Dan, sort of what it means to be a family and what the definition of that even is. And of the 6 or 7 movies of his that I've seen, Shoplifters is not only maybe the best, it's one of the more narratively straightforward films that Koreeda has made. Even though it is unusual in a lot of ways, I think that it's a pretty good entry point into his sort of singular style and worldview. And it unfolds, even though it is about these small moments, a lot of which are unspoken, people communicating with hand signals or the way that they touch one another or something that a person whispers to themselves while they're sitting on the beach. It unfolds like a mystery in a lot of ways, both for us and for some of the characters in the film, because there is this question sort of lurking at the center of Shoplifters, which is, who are these people and how are they related to one another?
How are they connected?
And because we see them interacting like a family, so we sort of just assume, and the movie doesn't explicitly tell us, we sort of assume that they are a family, a biological family at least, related by blood. And we start to figure out, based on the things that they say to one another using context, that they're not biologically related. Maybe some of them are. We're not totally sure. And then there's the question that the little boy is asking himself is, how did he come to be part of this family? Mm-hmm. And did he come to be a part of this family in a way that was maybe not the best way?
Right.
And the fact—
and what that means to him as a person and his philosophy of life. I mean, yeah. In many ways, it's a coming-of-age story about Shota.
And the idea that this movie ends in such a heartbreaking way, and you feel so much— it's heartbreaking in a multi-layered way because we're sad to see what happens, but at the same time, we find out these dark, upsetting things about some of these characters. So just the way that this movie so beautifully weaves in and out of all of these different feelings and tones is really masterful, I think. Kore-eda, if you're not familiar with him or you only know a couple of his films, this is a great starting point. I put it on my top 10 list for the year. I think it's terrific.
The thing that I appreciated most about this film was the fact that, as you pointed out, Nathan, it's not really a mystery, but there are these unknown aspects to what's happening. And so it rolls out kind of slowly. I mean, not the scenes per se, but the story, the narrative rolls out slowly. And you start to believe that you have connected people to one another. And I at least got one of the things wrong. I didn't know who was who or what was what. But you talk about it as a film about loss, but it really is more a film about connection. Like, what
does it mean? But connection through loss.
Correct. Yeah. Would there have been any situation that these people would have gotten together, met one another, but for what happened to them? But there are some moments of real joy in this film, too, and crushing sadness at the same time. I would encourage people, if you watch Shoplifters, to just let it be and let it happen in front of you. We've had some discussions lately with people who, I think even with Roma, which is clearly a masterpiece in many ways, they sort of struggled with the beginning of it and how slow it was. And
meditative,
know,
the, almost.
Yeah. And so I think this is, of course, different from that. Don't worry if you can't quite connect all the dots early on, because you will ultimately be able to do that. But the way he frames the shots, he, of course, has these real close-ups at different points. This family is living in tight
yeah.
quarters, and so they're all right there together all the
on
time.
On top of each other.
Yes, actually on top of each other. Notice I didn't say literally on top of each other. I said actually on top of each other. So I like his films, too. I like the familial themes, but they're never quite the families that we may see in the Hollywood context.
Yeah.
And we'll have some examples of that shortly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think it's melancholic, I think was the word that Manola Dargis used in her review.
Accurate.
And I think that that is an accurate one-word summation of this film.
And one of the things I want to point out about Shoplifters is I've been thinking a lot about the themes of duality. And it seems like we live in a society in which, particularly now, in which everything is up, down, black, white, in, out, whatever. It's one or the other. And here is a family who, they basically do bad things. I mean, it is based around shoplifting and the woman working in the laundry steals stuff out of the pockets. And there is a question of honesty. On the other hand, these people are the most loving, compassionate people you can ever find in any film ever. I mean, Noburo, the love that she throws toward Juri and explains to Juri that if someone hits you, that doesn't mean they love you. Loving you is, and then she takes on a big bear hug and said, this is love.
This now, is what
I
love
mean,
feels
how,
like.
Yeah. Exactly. How could you then judge a person like that, especially since she ends up making a sacrifice for all of them and
right,
then reveals a truth.
Right. But the complexity of Shoplifters, though, is that you see those moments. You see those tender, touching moments. But when you find out, mainly the three adults, the oldest, although I guess one of the younger women is an adult as well, but the three older ones
adult,
that are sort of running the household, when you find out what brought them together in the first place, it really does make you question your feelings because, yes, they are compassionate. Yes, they sacrifice in many ways throughout the film, but there's some real darkness there. And the fact that Corrieta is confident enough in his storytelling and confident enough in the way he's drawn these characters to show us that side of them and then give us a heartbreaker of an ending, I think is, I mean, it kind of whipsaws you a little bit, but
sure
I think that that's the brilliance of the movie.
And I think that maybe it speaks to us here in the U.S. where the only way that we can cope with bad things and bad people is to demonize them. And our whole discussion about what mass incarceration means and what it's like, we're just going to put them away and not think about them and so forth and so on and scare other people about them. And, you know, on many levels, this was very much a functional family.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But we do
far more functional than Jury's biological family.
Right. Well, who look to be the sort of classic poster family or whatever. Yeah. So these recurring themes of family and what they mean that show up in all of his work or most of his work is really intriguing because I think we are still trying to determine what is family today. And I think his taking the opportunity to show us different perspectives on that is excellent.
And that was Shoplifters. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at On the Basis of Sex and to preview the 2019 Spokane International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbin, and I discussed the Japanese film Shoplifters. Let's now move to the biopic On the Basis of Sex, after which we'll look at what to expect from the 2019 Spokane International Film Festival. By now, everyone should know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is. The Associate U.S. Supreme Court Justice was the subject of a 2018 documentary film, RBG, which has been nominated for a Best Documentary Feature Oscar. On the Basis of Sex, which was directed by Mimi Letter and directed by Daniel Stiepelman, involves the early years of Ginsburg's career, from her first year at Harvard Law School in 1956 through her arguments in the 1972 case before the 10th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals. It was that case, which the movie builds to and which Ginsburg won, that began Ginsburg's lifelong fight against discrimination on the basis of sex, or if you prefer, gender. Stiepelman, who actually is Ginsburg's nephew, does a good job of showing the discrimination that the justice herself faced, not just at Harvard, but while trying to find work despite graduating at the top of her class from Columbia Law School. The movie can't avoid delving into a bit of melodrama here and there for, of course, dramatic purposes, but the film's two basic messages come across loud and clear. Sexual discrimination is wrong, and Ginsburg is as tough as lawyers come.
That's absolutely true, and we have been witness to that in real life, as well as, Dan, you pointed out the earlier documentary this year, RBG. I think that this movie makes a good choice in focusing on the early life of Ruth Bader Ginsburg and her husband, Marty Ginsburg. So on the basis of sex, which we find out is an important aspect, at least from a legal perspective, of this film's reason for being, we are witnesses to what happens to women who had the audacity to go to law school in the 1950s and take seats away from more deserving men, meaning all men, because that was just an assumption that was
made. More deserving being in quote marks there, correct?
Correct. Yeah, exactly. I thought Felicity Jones was an excellent choice to play Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
What about Armie Hammer, though?
Well, okay, here's the problem. If I were going to choose somebody to play you, I would choose Armie Hammer, and because he's amazing and he looks great. And I don't think he physically resembled Martin Ginsburg, except perhaps in terms of height. Dan and I have this ongoing discussion about the movie Field of Dreams, and some of you have heard this before, and we always talk about the wife in that film.
And you use the term disparagingly, but in this sense?
Right. I always say that she was Field of Dreams' wife because the husband comes home and says, oh, we're going to build this baseball field in the backyard, and then this is going to happen, and they're going to come, and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, yes, dear, okay, fine. And she goes and gets him the shovel or whatever. Here, he really is Field of Dreams' husband in the movie, but I think in real life, too. And I think that's one of the strongest features of this film. If you read any of her biographies, if you listen to her talk about their life together, as well as the kids and the grandkids, I think they really did truly have a co-partnership. And I think that this movie shows that. It shows the early years of their marriage. It shows their partnering together on this particular argument. Marty Ginsburg was supposed to have one of the best senses of humor.
Besides being a first-rate tax attorney,
right.
Yes, exactly.
And we see one scene where he's sort of that charismatic guy, and I think they might have played that up just a little bit more. Opera is also a recurring theme throughout the movie, which reflects their lives, I think. So it hits on all these important things about the family and about the relationship, and then it has to tell the story of what she's doing. I went to see this with three other law professors, and it doesn't really portray law professors in the best light possible because they're sort of these eggheads that maybe are not contributing as effectively to the progression of the law as they might. But I thought they handled the scenes with the students really well. I hope this is an inspiring movie for young people and young girls in particular. There are some orchestrated quibbling back and forth among people at various points. But all in all, I thought the performances were sufficiently strong. The story is a little bit Lifetime-y movie, the way it rolls out. But I would definitely tell people to go see it.
And that was On the Basis of Sex. Let's close with a look at the Spokane International Film Festival. If you're listening to this on Friday night, you still have time to catch the second half of the festival's opening night screenings, plus the opening night party at the Montvale Event Center. If you're listening on Saturday, you still have a full week's worth of movies to catch. So here are a few recommendations, given the fact that some of these films may already be sold out.
You should go online and check out what films are available.
SpokaneFilmFestival.org.
And if you do discover that online tickets are no longer available for a particular film, that doesn't mean you'll be unable to see it. So my advice would be to go down to the Magic Lantern a little early, put yourself on the wait list, And depending on the number of pass holders who appear to view that particular offering, you may very likely get in. And please note, the short programs always sell out every year. But then there are encore performances of those shorts on Monday through Thursday nights in the smaller theaters. So you have a second bite at the apple on that one.
Yeah. One of the recommendations that I would make is a film that I'm introducing. Don't go because I'm there. In fact, stay away if you don't want to. No problem. It's Cold November. It's a film from Kosovo. It's the second movie from Kosovo that we had. We brought Kukumi to the 2009 festival, and I've been trying to find a Kosovar film to bring back every year since. And Cold November is a study of what it was like for ethnic Albanians in Pristina, the capital of Kosovo, in the early 1990s. And it's a heartbreaking, it's a hard movie to see, but it's a good film, particularly with a lot of what's going on in the world today.
And Dan will be there, so it's that's one of the movies I'm looking forward to, and I haven't actually seen it yet because I want to see it on a big screen, is playing February 6th, and that's a film called Shadow, and it's by Zhang Yimou, who you probably know from directing Hero, which was a big martial arts hit about 15
Raise
years ago.
Raise the Red Lantern.
Raise the Red Lantern.
I mean, so many
House
movies.
Of Flying Daggers.
Yes.
And it's the story of rival kingdoms in ancient Japan, and I've seen stills from it, and it just looks colorful and beautiful, which all of his films tend to be. So I don't know much about it. I know it's been getting good reviews. You've seen it, Dan, and you weren't that hot on it, right?
I think that it's Zhang Yimou working in the genre of big martial arts film. And to me, that's disappointing. To me, I loved his early work, in which it was much more a blend of history and just people.
But, right. Okay. Well, that's what I'm looking
forward
to.
But it's definitely worth seeing.
And then I'm also curious about a film called Jupiter's Moon, which is actually the closing night film on February 8th. And it was directed by Cornel Mondruso.
The guy
did
who
I get
did?
That right?
Yeah. Well, who knows? I'm not Hungarian.
But this is by the director of a movie that we reviewed on the show and loved on the show called White God,
yes.
Which is a violent revenge film starring a dog who is passed from one abusive owner to another and then gets a bunch of other dogs together and says, let's go and kill all these bad people that hurt us. And it is a wild, wild movie.
Yeah. And Jupiter's Moon it's a revenge film too in kind of a way. It's one of redemption also.
And it's science fiction, right?
It's kind of a magical realism. It's not science fiction. It's steeped right in a conflict that is well known today in terms of immigrants and whatever.
Okay.
But at the same time, the conceit is this one character has these powers that are supernatural, and it just blows everyone's mind.
See, this sounds up my alley.
No,
so that's February 8th.
Yeah,
and again,
that's the closing night movie.
And we should say again, SpokaneFilmFestival.org. That's where you can see the entire schedule because we've only talked about a couple of the movies. You can get tickets to the things that are available. And like MP said, if you can't get the tickets online, I would say show up at least a half hour early, maybe even earlier than that, and you might be able to get on the
while
list.
While the opening night movie is, the whole program is at the Bing Crosby Theater.
Right.
Everything else is at the Magic Lantern, and, 99 seats in one, 33 in another, so get there early.
And support your local film festival.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And don't forget the docs. There are a couple of great docs. One about Hasidic Ambulance Corps of Women.
Called 93 Queen.
Yeah,
right?
93 Queen. And the other one that I'm looking forward to is Idiosa More.
Yes. And that was our preview of the 2019 Spokane International Film Festival. And this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender and Murray Pat Truthart and I discussed Shoplifters and On the Basis of Sex. Let's take this moment to thank Jim Tevenin for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you too, our loyal listeners, and we invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again examine the world of contemporary cinema. Until then, remember these words from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. I ask no favor for my sex. All I ask of my brethren is that they take their feet off our necks. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.